Hello, everyone. Before I start, I'd like to introduce my interpreter, Elliot. He's in the Bay Area. We met in 1980 in college. So we've known each other for 41 years. He's my favorite voice for my hands. All right, let's get started. Thank you. Good morning. I've got my notes on my laptop, so I'm going to be looking back and forth, but good morning to all of you beautiful people in that beautiful little cold place up there in Washington. I'm really honored and thrilled to be here and to have a chance to share my journey with you all. I'd like to open my remarks with two acknowledgments. First, my dear cousin who lives among you, who brought up the idea of having her deaf cousin present to you all. So thank you, Simi, and love to you. And second, thanks to my niece, Brianne, because she asked me a really simple question not long ago. She said, "Do you feel privileged?" And this was not long ago during the Black Lives Matter movement when that was really active. She asked me that question, and my answer to her really got me started thinking and made me realize that I came into this world extremely privileged, even though I was born deaf. And that realization kind of helped to this gratitude inside me to grow and to continue to realize that, you know, the struggle I had was what to do with this gratitude. What do I do with the gratitude that's in me and this gratitude that keeps growing? Out of extremely small odds, I happened to be born deaf to deaf parents, which meant that I was guaranteed a natural language that both my brother and my deaf brother and I shared, that 90% of deaf people do not have that privilege. They're not born to deaf parents and aren't born into access to a natural language, because 90% of deaf people have hearing parents who don't know sign language, and so they don't have access to natural communication. So for most of you people who can hear, you don't think about this. You know, you don't think about the fact that you had communication and language from the moment you were born. So my brother and I, from a very young age, we had a deaf couple, an older deaf couple, who were like our deaf grandparents. We had other deaf kids that we would do things with. There was all other deaf elders in the community that were like our deaf aunts and uncles. So in that community, we had an extended family. Whereas my birth family, as much as I appreciated them, were all hearing other than my parents and my brother. I was also fortunate to attend a state-run boarding school for the deaf in Riverside, California for 11 years. And everyone at the school used sign language. And that was an advantage, a privilege that my parents never had. They were born into hearing, non-signing families, and went to schools where they didn't use sign language because back then none of the schools did. Well, I grew up in a family that signed, in a school that signed, among friends who signed. So I had access to everything. And I had access to deaf role models, extracurricular activities. I was on the, participated in many clubs and organizations, and especially was fortunate to be involved in school productions, plays, and things like that. And that all of these things would have never happened had I gone to a public school, because at that time in the 1960s and 70s, there were no interpreters. The law requiring sign language interpreters did not pass until 1975, when I was a sophomore in high school. And against all odds of being born into a deaf family, I also was born into a deaf family that was part of a deaf synagogue that was incorporated only a few months before I was born. That temple, Temple Beth Solomon for the Deaf, was a gathering place in LA in the 60s before they bought their own land and their own building in the San Fernando Valley, which is where I grew up. And that community and my entire life experience just instilled in me a love for the Jewish folklore, for Jewish society, Jewish values. And that synagogue is not in good shape today. We're not sure if it will even be able to continue. But anyway, I became a voracious reader. Although my parents were not highly educated, I often asked them questions, but they weren't able to satisfy my curiosity. I couldn't ask other people around me so much who didn't know sign language. So that really pushed me into the world of books, which I think, you know, ended up being a really positive thing. I fell in love with books in particular. I have some books I want to show you that I really fell in love with, the work of Chaim Potok and Isaac Bashevis Singer. Potok especially, I read voraciously. And I had an uncle, Simi's uncle also, who told us that Potok was actually a distant relative of ours, which just blew my mind and really thrilled me to know. I went to Poland twice to visit our ancestors' home village, our grandparents' home village, and visited actually the street where our grandparents had lived and learned so much about Jewish history. And not long ago, when I was reflecting on all of these experiences that I had and realized how fortunate I am, how lucky I am to have had these experiences. Now, again, speaking of books, another book that I've really relied on is this, Roots, by Alex Haley. I read that when I was 14, and it's all 666 pages. And I think five words out of the whole book that hit me harder than anything at the end, he says, "And that baby was me." And that was so powerful to me at that time, because it made me realize about my own journey, that Alex Haley had taken a journey looking for his history and trying to explain his story, his perception of his blackness. In a similar way, I had gone on a journey finding my story of deafness, thanks to this book. My undergraduate work in college, I went to the only deaf college in the world at the time, Gallaudet College, which is now Gallaudet University. And there, my world just expanded exponentially with deaf people from all over the country, all over the world who had come there. We had deaf professors, deaf scholars, and a landmark book that was published there is this book, Deaf Heritage. The author named Jack Gannon. And that was the first time I had read any book on the history of deaf people. This was really opened the door for me and many others to look at our history as deaf people. And it was critical, critical book. And another book that really impacted me was this one, When the Mind Hears by Harlan Lane. And that really burst the dam. It has a 50-page bibliography of work and scholarship on the history of deaf people. As a result of reading these books, I went to these historical places in our deaf history, to Connecticut, where the first deaf school had been established. And now, until today, I'm still uncovering my family's history, the history of deaf schools around the country, and the growth of deaf studies as a scholastic field. And just a couple weeks ago, I received this book, which is the minutes of our temple's sisterhood that was passed on to me and will now be at the Cal State Northridge Archives. And, you know, this is really, this shows the history of our people, of our deaf Jewish tribe in Southern California. So I'd like to talk about a couple other critical events in my life. 1989, which was the first time at Gallaudet University in its 124-year history, selected a deaf person as president. This was huge news. Then there was also a deaf cultural festival that took place to celebrate the deaf president's installation, and it was called the Deaf Way. And that was where I saw a production of a play. It was actually a mime play about how God raised a deaf boy. And it was really paralleled deaf history. And the rest is history. Well, the rest is my history. That story that I saw presented in the play was a fable. It was presented as a folktale. But that fable grew inside me, the idea, as I read more, and as I read The Power of Myth by Joseph Campbell, that made me realize that this fable was really not so much a fable. It was a mythology. And that just like blew my mind. I thought, this is the mythology of deaf people. And this idea just put me in awe that seeing deaf people as people of the eye, as signing people, that we have a story, we have a history that hasn't been written down like other religions have their mythologies. They have, you know, their history and their lore that's written. We don't necessarily, but it made me realize that we as deaf people need to develop our own story, our own mythology that will reflect the richness of who we are as a people. And I realize that it takes generations and generations for a mythology to develop. It doesn't come with one person. But what I feel like is perhaps I'm able to plant a seed, and that seed will grow. So what, in my efforts to mythologize deaf history, I've gone through developing many iterations of it, and many other books have influenced. This is the Deaf Child mythology of a deaf American experience. And it was developed first in American Sign Language. Ooh. It hasn't been translated into English yet. It's 12 hours long and a number of clips. And I'm in the process of translating it from the ASL to English. It's a lifelong labor of love, I guess. And I also have a textbook that goes with it. But two other pivotal events that I want to talk about. At the time, seemed very innocuous, but later they proved to be hugely influential. One was a close friend of mine who I knew at Gallaudet had asked me to speak about his college years at his memorial service, or actually his life service before he passed away. He wanted me to speak at a pre-dawn, and getting ready for that, I went to a pre-dawn sweat lodge ceremony east of San Jose, and that morning I will never forget. It was so meaningful. And then several years later, another friend of mine who I worked with at Lamar University in Texas invited me to go with his family to an event that happens only twice a year. It was a medicine wheel ceremony way out deep southwest Texas, right next to the Mexico, where I was able to meet and speak with two medicine people. And that weekend had a huge impact on me. And that really opened my eyes to the ways that we have to celebrate our life, celebrate our world, and really opened my eyes also to the way that Native American people, how their lore, their way of life on Turtle Island, which is, of course, America, but the way that provides us a path to understand our own life here. So all of these things kind of became part of the fabric of who I am and made me realize that really everything is connected in a great, big, beautiful planet that we call Earth. After years of reading in this area, looking at Jungian archetypes, looking at various religions, Buddhism, all kinds of spiritual paths, I think I became calmer with these burning questions. And oddly enough, I think I became more spiritual after reading Dawkins and Harris. Where is that book? Somewhere around here. This book especially. There's a story of the four horsemen. And Dawkins' book, Unraveling the Rainbow, helped me realize how miraculous it is to be in awe and to be in wonder of the natural world or science or whatever, just to be in awe of Gaia. I mean, what a simple act it is to just be in awe, like everything that we are. I realized all the stories that made me who I am together, everything together. It's not just Judaism. It's not just Buddhism. It's everything together that makes us who we are. And it helped me realize that all religions just provide us with archetypes that guide us on how to be here on Earth. Recently, I've read this book from Greta Thunberg, House on Fire, a speech that she gave. It really presents a capstone argument about Gaia. Then how Gaia has to come first before God. Otherwise, we'll be gone. And all of these books and all of my life experiences have really convinced me that probably there is nothing out there and that we live together in one house, and it's only us. It's up to us to take care of ourselves, our house, our planet, our home, and each other. And that's really what the meaning of Gaia is. And, you know, over my lifetime and over millennia, people have searched for answers. And I believe that no matter what it is, you have to hold on to something. And we have to realize that religions are meta stories that are given to us. We do have to celebrate our stories, and these stories have to be retold, but they need to be modified to match our times and match the situations that we find ourselves in. All of these sacred stories have to change. They can't become frozen. Otherwise, they become irrelevant to us in our daily lives. Any orthodoxy in the practice of religion becomes irrelevant. And just a few months ago, thanks to my brother who is interpreting for me right now, I met an amazing person, an independent-thinking female rabbi who I just found extraordinary, unconventional, and very inspiring. And if you can imagine a rabbi who fights for Palestinians, who's written extensively on nonviolent principles, using examples from the past, from Martin Luther King, from Gandhi, from the Torah, from many sources, Jewish and non-Jewish, throughout history, even getting into Jewish mysticism and the Kabbalah for examples of nonviolence in our tradition. This book, The Torah of Nonviolence by Rabbi Lynn Gottlieb, I found her principles of nonviolence to be extremely helpful for me to imagine how we can adapt our mythologies to living in our house today. And, you know, like the Buddhist principles, what we need to do is try to be the Buddha, try to be Jesus, whatever it is. We need to find inner balance and peace. So I've begun to realize that we can meld all of these different traditions into a meta story for everyone on the planet to celebrate together in this beautiful house that we have. I'd like to give you a quote by Joseph Campbell. And this quote is emblazoned on the spine of a book that unfortunately I don't have with me, but the quote is, "The only myth that is worth thinking about in the present and the future is the one that talks about the planet. Not about a city, not about a people, but the entire planet and everyone on it." And I think that's my main thought for now and for the future and for what the myth must be. I love that quote. I'm almost finished here. Bear with me. Again, I'm hoping today that you can move beyond the words and the signing here, and that we can think of Gaia as a light. And Gaia is our big, beautiful blue home. And we're all children in this home, and we have to learn to coexist for the healing of the planet, for the healing of all people, all beings, for our future here in this world. And if we prioritize God over the planet, over Gaia, that we'll be in trouble. We need to keep God or something to hold onto in order to serve a greater purpose, in order to achieve a healthier home for us and for our children. I try to practice what I'm preaching here. I try to eat less meat. I try to follow a plant-based diet. I try to think less about myself and more about the people around me. And, you know, I think we need to think about going solar, burning less fossil fuels. And we need to really learn how to employ the principles of nonviolence and kindness into our life. And we need to celebrate. And celebrate the positive things in our life. And we need to think about serving others over having other people serve us. So my question about what do I do about the gratitude inside of me? I think I need to express gratitude as often as I can and continue to be a positive, try to be a positive force in the world, to think about the sustainability and to believe that we will prevail. And we need to do this by making amends. So it starts with me. It starts with each of us. And I wish you all peace. And I apologize if I took too much of your time. I was hoping that we would have some time for questions. So I'm happy to stay longer if you would like to have your questions addressed, but thank you. Thank you.
Well, Charles, that was absolutely awesome. Really good. You're a natural born Unitarian. And our closing words for today will be signed by Dr. Charles and will be read by Mr. Elliot Hellman. So,
ready?
Yes, go ahead.
We are the stars, the dust of the explosion cast across space. We are the earth. We breathe and live and breathe of the ancient plants and beasts. We are a part of the great circle of humanity gathered around the fire, the hearth, the altar. Take this message with you today. We are one with the earth.